Calling all Swifties and champions of change, Like a Girl Media is rolling out the red carpet for you with our Thrive Like a Girl contest. We're all about celebrating powerful women leaders who inspire us to dream big and push boundaries. And who embodies that spirit more than Taylor Swift herself? Here's your chance to see her live in concert. We're giving away 2 tickets to Taylor Swift's show in London on Saturday, June 22nd. Imagine being part of the magic, all thanks to Like a Girl Media. Entering is easy. Subscribe, share, and show us which episodes inspired you the most. Visit our website or check our social media for all the details. Don't just dream it, be it. Thrive like a girl and make this summer unforgettable. Contest opens globally, void where prohibited, must be 18 or older to enter, no purchase necessary. Subscribe and share with hashtag Thrive Like a Girl and tag us at likeagirl_media for entry. Unlimited entries means unlimited chances. Winner chosen at random after contest closes May 20th, 2024. Will be notified via DM. Make sure your profiles are not private. Check full rules on our site. This is your shot to see Taylor Swift live. Don't miss it. Well, hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Hit Like a Girl podcast. This is a show where we get to talk about the 30,000-piece puzzle that makes up healthcare, and each one of our guests brings in one of their expertise, like what's the piece of the puzzle that you hold. And so today is a very special day. We have one returning guest and one new guest, and I'm going to let them both introduce themselves, but let's start with you, Dr. Adara Landry.
Thank you so much for the invitation to be here. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. My name is Adara Landry, Dr. Adara Landry. I'm an emergency medicine physician at the Brigham. I'm an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. I've been here for about 8 years, and I focused most of my career on, you know, advising and mentoring students, residents, and fellows. So early career professionals, in other words. Over the last few years, I've started writing on my own and with other people like Dr. Risa E. Lewis, who's here today, about the workplace. And we sort of set a journey a couple years ago to take that to another level, from writing articles to writing a book. And now we are co-authoring Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact together.
Thank you for that. And you, Dr. Lewis?
Hi, everybody. Also echoing the thank you for the invitation to speak with you today. Huge fan of the podcast. So I'm an emergency medicine physician, a healthcare designer, and I'm committed to the written, spoken, and designed word. And what does that mean? I'm a podcaster. I am a writer. I'm also a medical educator. And so in the book that we'll discuss, Adara and I really tried to help other people figure out how to navigate the workplace quicker, easier, more efficiently than we did it.
Okay, so the workplace is a totally different place than it was even just a few years ago. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have a lot of insight, but like even the transition from going to, well, just the changing work environment. And if you're dealing with a lot of younger folks, how are they handling it? It's something I've thought about for a while, of just like, can you imagine, you know, schooling from home and then trying to get into the corporate world or business world and then adjusting to the culture? Like, they must have a really tough time. Do you have any examples of what, and I'm just throwing it out there, but I'm sure that you must know some folks that are young and entering the workforce. Like, how are they managing? What are some of the struggles they face?
So yeah, part of my job is that I advise first through fourth year medical students. And so they are largely Gen Z. Many of them, as you said, spent most of their college experience virtual, or a large part of it virtual. And so I think one of the largest struggles is, you know, and they have a very fair perspective, but the conflict of, does learning have to be in person or not? Like, can you be effectively engaged and learning while not physically present? And there's a culture clash and tradition clash of what we've always done, which is a phrase that both Risa and I feel like is a toxic phrase, because it's basically saying we've always done it this way, so we have to continue doing it this way. And so I think that's a theme coming up over and over again. Do I have to actually be in class? And so I think the workplace equivalent with that would be is, you know, do I have to show up for work? Can I just do it remotely? And it's still as effective.
We, in writing this book, beta tested it with a full range of readers. And we didn't know how it was going to sit with some of our high school readers, some of our college readers, some of our just entering the workplace readers. And in a very positive, reaffirming way, everybody said, wow, like we didn't know this. Wow, no one taught us this. So there are influences of social media, as Adara just shared about, you know, where learning needs to occur, how it should occur, the mediums by which it occurs. Everything has changed. And so learning these skills, breaking it down into small pieces and making it doable for the listener, the reader, the audience, is something that we think will ring true and feel doable, not overwhelming to Gen Zers.
I mean, I always think about like, well, how is it done? When you look back on your, how much you've accomplished and all of the big goals that you might have as an individual, you know, for yourself or for your classmates or whatnot, and you look and you just think like, well, how do you do it? It's really step by step. You just do it one piece at a time. So can we talk about micro skills and how do you define them? And what are some examples of micro skills?
We get asked this question a lot, like, how do you define it? And people are like, well, it sounds like what it is. And in one way, it sounds like what it is. But our perspective comes from being emergency medicine physicians, where we're given these large tasks, like, you know, someone comes in, they've cut their scalp. And initially, when you're in training, you're like, okay, go fix that, go fix the wound. And there are so many steps involved in that process. So we translated that to navigating the workplace and taking something big, seemingly insurmountable, and breaking it down into small, doable steps. So small, concrete, fundamental building blocks that are additive, that are translatable, that help people get their larger goals accomplished, habits incorporated, and projects done.
And the way we approached this book, sort of speaking back to what Risa said on those early meetings, you know, we spent a good amount of time before we were even writing the first word of the book, just learning what the table of contents should look like. And we tried to make it A, comprehensive, so that it wasn't just on one focused topic, but it was really a great guide that holistically supported the employee. And we also tried to put it in order of maybe not necessarily importance. I mean, importance is one word, but also like how, like the order of operations, where that, you know, you first have to do this and then this and then this. So there is some flow to it. I just want to review some of the larger themes of the book. So we open with micro skills for self-care, because to us, you know, everything begins with the self. You have to be in a good spot before you start worrying about networking or building your brand. Like you as a physical, emotional, cognitive person needs to be well for, you know, well. And then we move on to managing a task list and polished communication and building your reputation. These are just like some basic fundamental things about building who you are as an individual employee. And then we move on to becoming a subject matter expert, learning your workplace culture, becoming a team player. And then we finally move on to some more complex and higher level thinking skills, growing your network, which is often a challenge, navigating conflict, and then end with actively finding new opportunities, which seems like it's a great chapter to end on.
Well, I love all of that. And I'd love to like dive in a little bit more, but I keep thinking about these are the types of skills that you might not get in your formal education and training. You know, like you might be going to med school or to law school or getting, you know, your MBA, but this is not necessarily things that will absolutely be useful to you, but you don't really get a class in them. And so, yeah, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, importantly, we say this is the book we wish we had been given to read when we were starting out. It's both of us, for some overlapping and some different and some of the same experiences, we were left feeling like, wait a minute, how did you know how to do that? Or like, who told you, how did you, you know, it's almost like the playbook. Sports reference, hit like a girl. You know, some people seem to get the playbook and knew how to navigate the workplace seamlessly. And some of us, it took a little while. Now we got there, you know, but gosh, let's make it easier for other people.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us rely on sort of on the job training, but I think we sort of took that content, that those experiences, those lessons learned, and put it to, you know, on the page or in the book learning. And so it's really just a series, a collection of our personal experiences, all of these micro skills. And, you know, in between any chapter, there might be, any, you know, 7 to 11 or so micro skills. So there's a lot of content, But all of these are topics that Reese and I have experienced personally, because we open each of the micro skills with a vignette that really lands on the idea of, we get it. We have needed this micro skill at one point in time. We didn't have this micro skill at one point in time. So just really grounded in the real world, you know, application.
I'd like to start with the micro skills in the self-care. Can we talk about that in a little bit deeper? And I will share with you, you know, I live in Mexico. I live in Baja California. So I had some friends visit me this last weekend. And that means they arrive on Friday and they leave on Sunday, and there's traffic. Like there's a huge amount of traffic that crosses the border specifically at those times. A lot of people are coming from California down for a weekend in Mexico. It's a really common theme. And I'm thinking about the micro skill of maintaining a positive attitude while driving, so that when there are a million people on the road and preventing yourself from having road rage, or like letting the person, you know, in when it you really don't want to, or not letting yourself become totally overwhelmed with either impatience or anger or frustration at like the situation, of like that micro skill of just maintaining peace in what might not be a very peaceful moment. Does that ring any true for anything as far as any of the skills? What would you call that?
I think what you're describing is micro skill number 7, offloading routine tasks that bring you no joy or purpose. I mean, for me, if it's something mandatory, like there is work that we have to do that no matter what, we can't take off our plate, right? Like I can list things from within my house, like changing diapers. I have to change diapers for my kids. Like I can't not do that, even though it's not like a fun activity. And same thing with work. Like I can't not check my inbox, my emails. But things that are optional, we really highlight that in this chapter, which I think most of us can understand that there's going to be a point in time where we have voluntarily taken some sort of project or task or responsibility on that ultimately is really painful for us and can ruin the moment, the day, our year. And so we address that in this chapter. I think in your specific case, I don't know how mandatory it is for you to pick your friends up from the airport versus suggesting they take some sort of a taxi or a shuttle, but maybe there's a compromise where they meet you halfway or something. But, you know, just being mindful of the fact that you don't have to continuously live life suffering, especially if there's room to change.
I'll add and jump in that. So say there is no other option, you do have to drive. And I wonder if you have been the recipient of friends who arrive frazzled, having done the trip to come visit you, and it takes them a while to unwind. You know, we're all human and we all have biologic needs. And so in that first chapter of micro skills for self-care, we actually talk about eating, like eating food on a regular basis. We talk about sleeping. We talk about the importance of movement and exercise. So, you know, all of us are going to feel the full range of the emotions. And I think the part that we can determine is how we express those emotions or how we react to situations. So I know that when I'm fed and when I'm slept, my control, and when I've done some yoga sessions, like my control is very different than when those things have been abandoned or put away, put to the side. So in that chapter, we talk a lot about taking care of the physical self, the mental self, the emotional self, the community self. And so because we believe everything starts with self-care and the self, you're then in a better place to work with teammates, take care of the work. And in this case, the work is driving that car to arrive at your friend's house fresh.
Well, I just get curious if like some people are just committed to road rage. I'm the kind of person that has road rage. I've heard people say that before. And I'm just like, oh, I feel like that's the opposite of a micro skill. Like that's a... because it would be really good to be able to manage. Like, you know that there's going to be traffic. You don't have to suffer through it. You don't have to be in a terrible mood.
And sometimes it's just a matter of adjusting the hour through which you drive. I mean, a lot of it is like realizing where is the point of flexibility and how you can change that environment. So maybe you don't leave during a high traffic time and you leave off hours. Maybe you carpool so that there's someone there to talk with you. I mean, what we're trying to teach is this idea of like, figuring out what your emotional thermometer is at the time, what's triggering it, and finding simple ways to circumvent it.
Well, let's address some of the vignettes that you guys, that were your personal experiences. So what were some of the lessons that were deep for you that you felt like you needed to share and kind of transition to supporting the community or teams or whatnot? And Risa, let's start with you.
Well, I'll give like the 30,000 foot view and just say, you know, for people that haven't experienced the book yet, Adair and I, when we write, there's the first draft, there's the as I call it, like kneading dough, like you're making bread. And there's so many iterations. And in the iterations of the actual micro skills and why it's hard, why it's important, and critical actions, that's a little different than our personal stories, our vignettes. Like to really get them fine-tuned and sharpened so they're saying what we want them to say and they're effective, and like whatever emotion that may have driven the story is kind of worked out, and we're able to see, here's the lesson, or here's the feedback, or this is why this is actually a really important story. That's how we got there, and it took a while. I'll share one about feedback. And I was in a faculty meeting, and a specific resident doctor in training was talked about, and people were saying that she, on shift, wasn't able to complete tasks, would pick up new patients without completing and dispositioning the other patients, and that really, to work with them was not as smooth as faculty would have hoped. So I soon thereafter worked a shift with this resident doctor, and I really did not provide a stellar feedback performance. I basically said, I started the shift, I said, okay, today's focus, I said, okay, the word for today is focus. And the resident was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I really would like you to focus on your patient care. Don't worry about picking up new patients if you haven't completed the patients you already are holding. And I was just, and it came out of nowhere. The resident doctor clearly had not gotten feedback from the people that probably should have been giving it. And I gave no context. I gave no warning. It was the beginning of a shift. And I think she was just flabbergasted. And I wasn't mean. I was more trying to be encouraging and focus. And yeah, so like, I would call it an epic flop. And you know, going forward and in learning more about giving feedback and having been the recipient of a lot of feedback in my professional life, you know, you want to set the person up. You want to make sure that everybody feels psychologically safe and the actual location works. You have to ask permission to provide that feedback. And then, you know, one of the things I found very effective is role playing. We talk about a personal board of directors. I love role playing with members of my personal board of directors before I'm going to have a feedback conversation.
I'm going to agree with everything that Risa said. That's all just great advice. And I think it sort of speaks to the idea that everything that we share, there's a vignette or a personal touch to it, because we really did experience all these things. For me, my favorite is learn what your supervisors expect of you. This is just my favorite for today. If you ask me something tomorrow, it'd be different. And so, you know, a few years ago, I went to this lecture, it was a seminar, and the speaker was pretty senior male faculty member. And he talked about how when he was in like a training year, like a fellowship year, he and his co-fellow were tasked with planning webinars or not webinars, seminars. And he took an approach where he just sent out like a very basic email and said, you know, this is the time, location, I'll see you there, and ordered like pizza and water kind of thing. And his co-fellow took a very different approach and had like formatted beautiful invitations and RSVP list and ordered artisanal food and all these sorts of specialized things. And it was just a lot more over the top. He didn't take that route because he knew that his supervisor didn't care that all that work was being done. Instead, he was doing research, giving talks, writing grants. Like those are the things that his supervisor cared about. That was the currency. And obviously there's a lot to talk about in terms of the gender between the two and who had access to mentorship that provided him that insight. But aside from that, which is a very important topic still, he knew what to do and he did that work. And that's what got him the job and not her. And I thought it was a very important thing, because you really do want to know what is expected of you No matter what generation you are, I think everyone needs to know when you're brought onto a team, why you're being brought on and what they're expecting you to do.
So neither one of them were given to, they were basically assigned the same task and they just took totally different approaches, but it was the same supervisor. So one knew what they wanted and what the expectation and probably over-delivered in a way, but...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Actually, I just heard the term over-efforting. So like putting in too much effort.
Which could then be looked down upon, right? You're just like, oh, you wasted time or you wasted...
I think if you're putting effort into the things that are valuable, then it might be respected. I think the issue here is a lot of women, especially, do what's also called non-promotable tasks or non-promotable work, meaning things that don't add lines to your CV, don't get you invited to speak, or it doesn't end up in a paper or publication of some sort. And so to me, that was like the first version of these terms I now know, over-efforting and non-promotable work.
That's great vocabulary. Something that struck me was managing ego effectively. And I wanted to hear both of your guys' input on how to do that. Because I imagine in your world that is something that shows up in a lot of different rooms and ways. And so please share with me and the audience, like, that is an issue. Like, how do we manage other folks' egos or even our own?
In this microskill, we talk about confidence and competence. And one of the stories shared was my experience where I would meet with a mentor, and she was very, very high up in a hospital system where I was working. She was not a doctor. And she said this, and I loved quoting it and re-quoting it. And it was in one of our one-on-ones, and she was talking about doctors. And she's like, you know, Risa, doctors think they're the smartest persons in the room. And they often are, but they're not the only smart people in the room. Now, I don't think we walk around thinking, we meaning the three of us in this conversation, walk around thinking that and holding that, but there is an element to the training of medicine, to the hierarchical reporting structure, to, you know, even the way Adara has a great story of like walking into an elevator, of just the way teams function that sets this up. And also there is this element of like our decisions are pretty serious sometimes, life and death decisions. So there's this element, and people sometimes speak about physicians as having the God-like complex. So we see it. And also as women, there is literature talking about competence and confidence and how and who gets rewarded for what. And even though women are often more competent, they're not promoted in the same way that men who are not as competent but are highly confident are rewarded. And, you know, this refers to some articles in Harvard Business Review and some books we've read. So it's a little frustrating, and also it's important. It's important feedback because it can help the reader, the listener, the person experiencing our book learn how to navigate the workplace, understand the rules, the playbook that we talk about.
Adara, would you want to share your elevator story?
Yeah, so that actually falls into a different chapter. I think that was read your contract, guides, handbooks, and HR policies. So I was in a surgical service, and we were sitting at a table and had just finished up what's called pre-rounding. So we were just going through our patients on like a slide or something. And we got up to actually physically round on the patients. And so I was the closest to the door, and I walked over to the elevator. I was a few steps ahead of the rest of the team just because, like I said, I was closest to the door. So I had a little bit of a head start. I wasn't thinking anything at that time, just I'm going to the elevator. I press the elevator button. I get onto the elevator, and everyone who was once chatting behind me stopped chatting because I had entered the elevator first, and I was standing in the position where the senior member of the team usually stands. And so it was one of those things where I'm just in the elevator looking at them, and they're out of the elevator looking at me, and I'm thinking, what is going on? And it wasn't until they told me that you're standing in the wrong spot that I understood that there was a hierarchy in this team that I was not aware of. And it was, there's, you know, this reason of like the person pressing the button knows which floor to go on to next. And it's just easier for them to press the button if they're right next to it. So, you know, the culture of that team, it made sense to them, right? And whether or not I agreed or disagreed doesn't matter as much as I didn't know the culture of the team. And so that's another story of like me just saying, okay, well, I have my own opinion, my own ego, my own feelings about this, but it doesn't matter because I need to do well in this rotation and I have to adapt to the culture here.
How would you have known that? But there's like...
Oh, yeah. So actually, they did mention it in their... So going back to the micro scale of reading your contract guides, handbooks, and HR policies, there was like a orientation email that was sent out. And like one of like the fine print lines was about the system in which they round and who gets on first and all those sorts of things. So they actually do mention it in writing, you know, in the email. So I missed it.
Wow, that's a big one. I mean, it's a big one and a small one, but interesting just culturally that like, oh, I didn't mean to offend anybody, but just by being yourself.
Well, I think it kind of speaks to perception, right? Because they could have seen me do this and their thought could have been, oh my God, you know, she has too much confidence or ego to just like disregard the rules, right? And that wasn't the case at all. I didn't even know that was a rule. And so, you know, ego can sometimes be misinterpreted or mislabeled as just someone's making a mistake or doesn't know the expectation.
I feel like there's so much nuance and this is like a real, okay, how many micro skills are included in here? Because even if somebody doesn't need to learn every single one of them, I think all of us could benefit from at minimum a handful, if not a scoopful or more.
It's almost as if we planted this question. It's 10 chapters. And as Adara said, 7 to 11 micro skills within each chapter. We intentionally designed it so you don't have to read it cover to cover. You can use it as a manual. You can go in and focus. You're like, oh gosh, I'm about to run a meeting. Let me read about what they wrote, micro skills about how to run a meeting, or I'm going to be giving a talk. We have a whole chapter with lots of micro skills on polished communication. So it can be a quick reference and it can be a cover to cover. However, the person wants to experience it.
I'm going to print this out and just have it available for whenever I need it. Because even in the conversation around like empathy or pausing before you speak, you know, and like having it's how to show up, right? It's not English class. It's not math. It's not science. It's those soft skills, and those soft skills are really, really important.
And they're hard to teach. I mean, especially if you don't have the time to sit down and give someone feedback. We have a micro skill on understanding your own body language and reading that of others. And so, you know, you can imagine that if you wanted to teach every single employee in your job finite and actionable feedback about their body language, that would take a lot of time. And so a lot of that gets ignored and people just assume what they're doing is correct because no one has intervened.
Well, this is incredible. So thank you, ladies, for the work that you're doing and for all of the writing and knowledge and wisdom that you're sharing. Are there any parting words that you would like to, words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our audience?
I just want to tag the introduction where we start from a place of three things. Number one, time is currency and time can only be spent. So people should be thoughtful and intentional how and with whom they spend their time. We really tried to write this book, taking away the assumptions that people are coming from the same starting line. So really trying to make it accessible and create ways to increase belonging in the workplace. And finally, you know, at the end of the day, all of us want education and learning if only it's accessible to everybody.
I think I want people to know that all large goals or big ambitions that they have can be broken down into really small skills. And I think that's important because I think many of us know that we have some bigger purpose or something that we're aspiring to achieve, but really are less sure about how to get there. And so we hope that even if the exact goal you want isn't in this book, by reading it, you understand the importance of, you know, our framework that we're delivering.
Okay, so when will this book be available and where can we get it? And I want to point all of our readers to, like, we're going to tackle this one in our book club. It's happening, I declare.
Well, thank you for that. We appreciate the support. It launches April 16th, 2024. It is available for pre-order now, depending on when this comes out. But April 16th is the official launch date. And you can buy it anywhere you would buy books regularly, major bookstores, your local bookstores, bookshop.com. You can also check it out from your local library by just requesting it being there. Anywhere else, I think that's it.
All right. And if people would like to follow your work or find you online, where do you direct them?
We're on all the major socials, LinkedIn, Instagram, X. And we also each have websites. And if you just Google our names, you'll find us.
Great. I will direct our listeners in the show notes. Thank you, ladies. I've really enjoyed this conversation and I'm excited to share your amazing work with our listeners. And I am excited to just like get better just by all of that you have put together. So I really, really, really am grateful for both of you.
Thank you so much for the invitation to be here.
Great conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can learn more about us or this guest by going to our website or visiting us on any of the socials with the handle HitLikeAGirlPod. Thanks again. See you soon. Again, thank you so much for listening to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. I am truly grateful for you, and I'm wondering if you could do me a quick favor. Would you be willing to follow or subscribe to this podcast, or maybe leave us a rating or review? Or if you're feeling extra generous, would you share this episode on your Instagram stories or with a friend? All those things help us podcasters out so much. I'm the show's host, Joy Rios, and I'll see you next time.